His name was John Cabot, and he discovered what we now call North America. Conventional history has not put Columbus and Cabot together, but you can do, not least through the research of a Freemasonic historian of great reputation called Manly P. Hall, who points out that Columbus and Cabot both operated in Genoa at the same time, and both were connected to the same secret society network. And within a few years, 4 or 5 years of each other, one finds one part of the Americas, the other finds another part of the Americas. Just a coincidence, nothing to worry about. What was actually happening was the time scale had come to take over America, and it moved on after that. So Columbus was a front man and a knowing one. There's one other group that came out of this Near East, which it is vital to talk about, and it relates actually to Columbus too. We've seen how one group of peoples moved by land across from that Caucasus, Turkey, Iran area, and across to become the white races of Europe. We've seen how the Phoenicians went to Britain much earlier than that, 3000 BC. But there was another group which came out of the Middle Near East and parked themselves in Venice in northern Italy. And these Phoenicians became the Venetians. And they created a maritime, because they were a maritime nation, the Phoenicians, and financial empire out of Venice. And that financial empire was based on lending people money that didn't exist and charging interest on it and funding both sides in wars. Now, within these white Phoenician bloodlines, yet again, were these reptilian bloodlines, these Anunnaki bloodlines. And again, you'll have to refer to The Biggest Secret to see the enormous evidence that this stuff about the Anunnaki and the reptilians is correct. While they were in Venice, this group of Phoenicians Anunnaki became known as the Black Nobility because they started creating titles for themselves and taking over titles that already existed. And they got this nickname, the Black Nobility. Now, some of the so-called Jewish banking names of the world today, like the Warburgs, not actually Jewish at all because they came out of this group in Venice. The Warburgs, who were fundamental in creating the Federal Reserve, the so-called Central Bank of America, which is privately owned from people in Europe, the Warburgs were called the Abraham del Banco family in Venice, and they became the Warburgs when they moved up into Germany and Europe. So eventually, this Black Nobility in Venice moved north through Germany and centered themselves in Amsterdam. In 1688, one of this Black Nobility called William of Orange was manipulated onto the throne of England as William III. With that, this whole shebang moved across and created its epicenter in London. So at that point, those bloodlines that had gone much earlier through the Phoenicians into Britain and those that had come across land and also through Venice actually came together in London. It was William of Orange, a few years after he became king, who signed the charter that created the Bank of England and the banking, central banking system was created. It was after that time that the City of London Financial District became the center of global finance. And it was after that time that we got the great British Empire, when these bloodlines were expanded from Britain all over the world, to Africa, to Australia, to Asia, to the Americas. And what started out in Babylon and the Near East and moved outwards now went global because of the British Empire. People say that because the British Empire and these European empires have actually contracted since then, that it can't be true that the world's still controlled from London and these cities. But there's two ways of controlling people. One has a finite life. One can go on forever until someone exposes it. The first one is overt, in-your-face control, the dictatorship, where Britain controls this country and controls that country. The people in that country know where they are. They're controlled by an outside force, like the Russians during communism and the Germans during Hitler. That has a finite life because eventually when you know where you stand, you're going to rebel against that control. Much more subtle to replace that overt control with covert control, where people are controlled, but they don't know that they're controlled. People don't rebel about the fact that they're not free if they think they are. So what happened as the contraction came of these empires, not least the British Empire, is while on the surface it seemed to be over, left outside in those countries, back in those countries, were the bloodlines and the secret society network, which has continued to control those countries from this point on. Because what happened in that ancient time is that you had the positive use of knowledge, And they created mystery schools and secret societies in Egypt and elsewhere to pass this advanced knowledge on in a positive way. That you then had this other force, largely out of Babylon, that also created mystery schools and secret societies for very different reasons. To pass on the advanced knowledge only to the chosen ones that they chose, and they created the institutions, these same secret societies, in the public arena that sucked that advanced knowledge out of circulation. Not least the Inquisition. When, 2 minutes into this video, I would have signed a suicide note during the Inquisition. So therefore, you had a situation in which the knowledge was passed on to the few and the institutions created by that secret society network to suck it out of public circulation. Eventually, and people like Manly P. Hall have documented this, that negative use of knowledge, that negative structure of mystery schools and secret societies also infiltrated eventually and took over the positive mystery schools and secret societies. So we reached a point eventually where knowledge was passed on only to the few at the highest level who had a malevolent intent, and it was sucked out of the public arena big time. So the structure today is basically this. The epicenter and operational level is in London. That's where the global agenda is decided. And in these different countries like America, the United States, South Africa, etc., you have bloodline branch managers, as I call them, who run those particular countries in line with the centrally decided and coordinated agenda. In South Africa, you've got the Oppenheimer family, who are the bloodline controllers of South Africa before and after Mandela, control the stock market, the diamond mines and the gold mines and the other industries and the media. In America, the bloodline branch managers are the Rockefellers and the cartel of the Eastern establishment, who get their orders from the centrally coordinated epicenter in London and Paris, particularly London, and they run America in line with that. So wherever I go, in the 20-odd countries I've talked in and researched in so far, the same policies, the same structures exist because they're coming from a central point. And the world is controlled, therefore, by a very, very few people. One of the bloodlines centered in London are the Windsors. In The Biggest Secret, I expose some stunning, breathtaking information about the real nature of the Windsors and the bloodlines. These are black nobility bloodlines who go back through this story that I've been talking about, and that's why they have so much power and so much wealth and so much influence, because they're meant to, but not for long. Now this is Ben. Everyone knows that the founding fathers believed in freedom in America. Well, some of them might have done, but some of them didn't. Because what happened in 1776 and afterwards, when America to this day believed it was becoming an independent nation and free, what happened was that overt control of the Americas through the colonies was replaced by covert control. America has never been free of Britain's influence and control to this very day, and it's about time it was. And people like Benjamin Franklin, and I document this in detail in The Biggest Secret, were agents of British intelligence and the British Crown. This guy was parked in Paris as an ambassador in Paris, and he spent tremendous amounts of time in London. More than that, I said earlier that one of the common themes of these bloodlines through history is blood drinking, satanic ceremonies, et cetera, human sacrifice. That's what this guy was into. He was one of the top Freemasons in America. He was a member of key Freemasonic lodges in France, which created the French Revolution, like the Nine Sisters Lodge. And he was a member of a really elite secret society and satanic human sacrificing blood drinking operation in Britain called the Hellfire Club, run by a British government minister called Sir Francis Dashwood, and who built underground chambers in his estate at Wickham, north of London, to do the sacrificing and stuff. That may sound amazing, but just a little while ago in the British newspapers, this story broke. Again, while Benjamin Franklin was fighting for freedom for the American colonies, he parked his bum in London. And he lived in a place called 36 Craven Street near Trafalgar Square. Well, they've just been renovating that to turn it into a Benjamin Franklin museum. And bingo, they found 10 bodies underneath the floor, six of them children, and they've dated them to the time Benjamin Franklin lived there. They've said, oh, he must have been into body snatching. When you link it to his other activities, I think there's probably another explanation. Thomas Jefferson, again, one of the aristocratic bloodlines from Europe, and a guy who was a member of the Rosicrucian secret society and other esoteric secret societies that carried this knowledge. He just didn't tell anyone else about it. He also owned 200 slaves, Thomas Jefferson, while writing that every man is created equal. Slight contradiction there, I feel. Maybe we're all equal unless you've got a black face. And so when you look at the presidents from the very start, this is George Washington. Again, another of the aristocratic bloodlines from Europe that became presidents of the United States. When I'm talking about these same bloodlines taking over Europe and then through the British Empire taking over America and other countries, I'm not kidding. When you do the genealogical research, you find some remarkable statistics. Since George Washington became president in 1789, and including him, every single American presidential election has been won by the candidate with the most British and European royal genes. And that comes from Burke's Peerage, the Bible of aristocratic genealogy on the planet, based in Britain. We've had, at the time that I'm speaking these words, 42 American presidents. 33 of them are genetically related to England's Alfred the Great and Charlemagne, the most famous monarch of France. Way back, he became monarch for the Holy Roman Empire. Of the 42 presidents, 19 have been genetically related to England's King Edward III, who has thousands of blood connections to Prince Charles. And then you look at Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton's a kid from Arkansas. We all know that. He's not connected to any bloodlines. Just kid off the street. Made good, because anyone can become president in America. I know, I read it somewhere. Clinton is genetically related to the House of Windsor, to every Scottish monarch, to King Henry III of England, and to King Robert I of France. And this is why, because of his bloodline, that he was taken at a very early age and given this scholarship to Oxford University called a Rhodes Scholarship, which is given to bloodline people in the world to go and be indoctrinated into this agenda in Britain. And then they come back, and the ratio of them that become presidents or people in power behind the scenes in their countries is absolutely vast because of their bloodline. There's a number of symbols which you can pick up, because there's a secret language of this brotherhood, again, that comes out of Babylon. And as the time has gone on, the malevolent use of this advanced knowledge through this, what you might call Babylon brotherhood that emerged on a global level as it is today, has become the dominating force on the planet, interacting, as I talk about in detail in The Biggest Secret, with this Anunnaki extraterrestrial force or race. One of the symbols is the pyramid, and particularly the pyramid with the capstone missing, the pyramid and all-seeing eye. This was put on the dollar bill in 1933-34 by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, another of the bloodlines who goes back to French aristocracy, which connects in with the British. And the symbol you're looking at was actually the symbol of a secret society called the Bavarian Illuminati, which was behind the French Revolution, and it goes much further back than that. So the obsession with symbolism and for other reasons, certain symbols is phenomenal. People asked a few years ago during the presidency in France of François Mitterrand, why on earth did they put this big black pyramid, this glass black pyramid, next to the beautiful Louvre Museum? People can understand it, because from an aesthetic point of view, it was ludicrous. But they built pyramids in Egypt to interact with the energy and to create a particular energy field. They did the same on Mars, it would seem also. And they're doing the same in the modern world in the street plans. This is why, and we'll see this as this talk unfolds, why that pyramid was put there. And anyone know where that is? Many people in America will. It's Dealey Plaza. This is where they killed Kennedy, in Dealey Plaza. And the street plan of Dealey Plaza, where the first Freemasonic temple in Dallas was put, is a pyramid with the capstone missing. They killed Kennedy on the right-hand side, the grassy knoll near the number 5 there, and down the bottom of the pyramid in an underground car park is where they killed Lee Harvey Oswald, who was falsely accused of doing the deed, but you need someone to blame when you don't want people to know what really happened. And we'll see as this unfolds, and we'll talk about the Diana situation and her murder in Paris, the obsession with ritual and symbols is unbelievable, and it's one way of reading this brotherhood. The key brotherhood signature is the lighted torch. This comes from an ancient legend which goes back to the Watchers or Anunnaki, the extraterrestrials. They were also called the Watchers in some ancient texts. And the legend was that some of these Watchers gave knowledge to humanity, or a certain section of humanity. And a number of deities have been invented in the various different cultures like ancient Greece, etc., to symbolize this same story of the gods giving knowledge to certain numbers of humans. The most famous of these is this guy, Prometheus, the Greek god who was supposed to have come from the Caucasus Mountains, and he's holding, as you see, the flame. The flame is symbolic of knowledge, the sun, the illuminated ones. The Illuminati is one name for this brotherhood, the illuminated ones, those illuminated into this advanced knowledge. And so what you're looking at is a gold depiction of Prometheus in the Rockefeller Center in New York, put there by the Rockefellers, and there's a plaque to show that, because they, one of the bloodline families running America on behalf of the London Central elite, they know the symbolism of Prometheus. And so the lighted torch or the flame became the key signature of this brotherhood, and you can follow it. That's what this is. This is an exact replica of the Statue of Liberty in Las Vegas. That's why you've got the fairground ride behind. But what you're looking at is the lighted torch, the sun, knowledge, the illuminated ones, the Illuminati, the brotherhood. Also around the head, you see the rays of the sun. Now that's classic Queen Semiramis symbolism. That's basically Queen Semiramis of Babylon. And because of this difference between those in the knowledge, the few, and the masses who are not, people look in America and around the world at that in New York Harbor and they say, oh yeah, that's symbolizing the land of the free. No, no. It's symbolizing the opposite. It's saying, look, we run the show and we're telling you and you haven't even got a clue. And this is not actually new at all. This was given, in terms of America, this was given, the Statue of Liberty, to New York by French Freemasons who were in the underground stream of knowledge of what it represented. And in Paris to this day, in an island on the River Seine, there's the Eiffel Tower in the background, there is the French Statue of Liberty in the same way. Because again, it symbolizes something to this brotherhood, which the masses don't understand. When they killed Kennedy in Dealey Plaza, there's the grassy knoll over on the right there. Afterwards, they put in Dealey Plaza an obelisk, which is a Freemasonic symbol relating to the sun, the phallic symbol, the male energy. Again, goes back to ancient Egypt, etc. And at the top of that, after they killed Kennedy, they put a depiction of the lighted torch, because that is the Illuminati brotherhood signature saying, we killed Kennedy, and we're telling you, and you don't even see it. What did they put on Kennedy's grave to this day? The lighted torch. They call it the eternal flame, but it's their signature saying, we killed Kennedy, and we're telling you, and you're not even bright enough to see it. But of course, if you don't understand the story, we're not being told, how can you see it? It just seems like the eternal flame, a positive thing. It's not. This is Paris. There's the Eiffel Tower. That is an exact replica put there in the late 80s. Of the torch held by both the French and the American Statue of Liberty. What is that? Where is that? That stands on top of the Pont d'Alma tunnel in Paris, almost on the spot underneath where Diana was killed in the car crash. And that has become the shrine, if you see the flowers there, to Diana, exactly as planned. And what have they put on the island where they buried her, or claimed to have done, at Althorp Park in Northamptonshire in England, on the Spencer Estate? They put the lighted torch, the signature, we did it. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in a second. There we go on the dime, the lighted torch, the Illuminati. What they also do is create street plans that have all these symbols in them. And when we get to the next video, I'll pick up that in Paris, take it into Washington, and talk about a stream of other things that relate to the basic structure I've already described. And I'll relate it to the assassination, because that's what it was, of Diana, Princess of Wales. And also, when we've looked at the structure of how we're controlled, we can look at the way out of here, because we're only controlled because we allow ourselves to be controlled, because we give our power away. We take it back. All this stuff is over. To summarize this first part, we had the intervention in the human genetic stream in two ways. First of all, a Martian race that came after the cataclysm to Earth settled themselves in that middle Near East area. Not least because during the cataclysm, the only way to survive was to get to a very high place. Agriculture started at 10,000 feet and more. But complicating what would have been normally a simple story of Martians coming to the Earth, a white race, was this Anunnaki, this reptilian race that interbred, creating particular bloodstreams that it could connect with and therefore control. And it's these reptilian human bloodlines that became the bloodlines of the aristocracy and the royal families and the key establishment families of the world, which today, to this minute, still run the show. Their secret language and how they speak to each other and how they further manipulate us will become clear in the next video. Thanks for now.